Have you ever thought you were different from anyone else? Yeah, it's a really common belief, you know. Joseph was different than everyone else, or so it seemed. He was the youngest of 12 boys and one girl. Dinah was the sister who is often not even mentioned when the family is mentioned, so you can imagine how she might have felt not very included in the family. But this isn't Dinah's story, it's Joseph's story. And this is a biblical Old Testament story, so some of you may know it. Joseph was the favorite son of Jacob, of all those 12 boys. And he, at the time, was the first child of Rachel, who was Jacob's favorite wife. He had just a mere 11 or 12 children with Leah. And then this one, you know, his real beloved was Rachel. So that was part of the favoritism toward Joseph. But also Joseph had some divinely ordained gifts that he used just really freely. And I think Jacob also appreciated that. So to demonstrate his love, his great love for his son, Jacob gave him a special garment. Sometimes it's referred to as a dress, sometimes it's referred to as a robe. It was very ornate, it was very colorful. It was called a kitanat pasim. And there's only one other reference to that in the biblical stories, and that was when Tamar was gifted one from her father, and her father was a king, so that makes her a princess. So the princess, or some say priestess, because she might have had some priestess-type duties, was gifted the very same thing that Joseph was given. So it, at the very least, is a unisex garment. And there are many depictions of it. In this one, Joseph is depicted in a striped, many-colored robe, and he's explaining to his brothers a dream that he had. The dream was that there were 12 stars. One was a super bright, big star, and the other 11 were bowing down to that one star. So you can imagine that was a pretty easy interpretation, who might be the brightest of those stars, and how that might have made the brothers feel. They were angry. They were jealous. They were so angry and so jealous, in fact, that they plotted to kill their little brother. And they had a whole plan that they worked out amongst them and decided that what they would do is they would kill Joseph, and then they would kill a goat, and then they would spread the goat's blood all over the special dress Joseph had been given, bring it back to Dad, and say, a wild animal must have gotten your favorite son. And Reuben, the oldest one, though, was the interrupter of hate. Reuben was the guy that in a crazy mob of people, that you know how we get as human beings sometimes when we're not on our best behavior, that first of all, we know how the pattern goes, right, throughout history. First of all, we start otherizing people, and then the otherizing becomes demonizing, and then that makes it okay to be violent toward them because they're not seen as equally as human or as worthy as the rest. And so that's kind of how the process goes. And so Reuben is the one who says, wait a second, I don't want, you know, he doesn't say it out loud, I don't want to kill my brother, because, you know, he's got to kind of go along with the crowd to some degree. He goes, why don't we instead throw our little brother down into a dry well where he can't get out? A very kind gesture. From the interrupter of hate, right? Well, you know, it's progress in a sort of way. And so, but actually what Reuben had in mind was that he was going to go back later when his brothers weren't around and rescue his little brother. So he did have a plan that was, in the end, a kinder plan. I'm not sure where Reuben went, but the rest of the guys were hanging out in town, probably having a meal or something, and a band of Egyptians came through. And Judah, one of the brothers, had this great idea, according to him, that they should sell Joseph instead into slavery in Egypt. And so it said, they make a point in the scriptures that Joseph was really beautiful. He was well-built and handsome. So maybe getting a better price, who knows? But So they sell him off to Potiphar, who is a guy of high status in Egypt, and off he whisks to a strange and foreign land. Now, we're going to pause his story there for a moment and just consider for ourselves what it's like when we perceive ourselves as different from everyone else, and how that can lead us to conclude that we don't belong. Anybody ever follow that pattern of thought? You don't belong, whatever that is, in your family, in your school, in your workplace, in the human family, you know, on earth. You know, it can get really expanded out for star seeds, right? And so it's that understanding that we've put together in our minds, but we'll unpack this a little bit more. It does create some issues for us. So if you've ever felt that way, that you go from feeling different to concluding that you don't belong, there is a recognition, too, when we go to the divine understanding, when we go to the bigger picture understanding from a spiritual point of view, that actually you are intentionally made different. Why else would the Creator have made such a diversity of form, even within the human family, of color, of expression, of creativity, of desires and likes and loves? Why else would we be this rainbow of different form and all of this if it weren't intended to be so? So it says in the scriptures that God knows, not just knows every hair on your head. Now, keep in mind there's about 8 billion of us. But numbers them all. I mean, that is a pretty clear indication that you are so known and so loved, even that every hair on your head is known. I mean, think about a mother or a father who really loves their baby or their child. They know those intricacies. Or how you might feel with your own lover. You know those intricacies of that person. You know where the birthmarks are and the little indentations or the funny dimples or whatever it is. It's like that. And so we think about that kind of intimate love in which we are loved in all our beautiful, unique expression of who each one of us is so individually. The Psalm 139 really brings some of this home, too. And the psalmist, of course, is speaking out to the one in this way where there's this beautiful, like, recognition of this. He says, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well." I love that part. It's like, I look around the world and I see how wonderfully made things are, how beautiful things are, how incredible nature is, how just the beauty of the world. And I know full well how wonderfully made things are. So I'm saying thank you because I know I too am a part of that. That I too am wonderfully made, carefully made, so intimately loved that you know every hair on my head. And if you're bald, don't worry. There's some other knowing. There's some other detail. Every freckle on your skin, there's something we can come up with there. Don't get too literal on us. We're not very literal here at Unity. The psalmist goes on to say, "My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them even came to be." So there's this knowing in this that I am a unique soul and I am loved with this everlasting love exactly as I am. Your own sense of purpose and creative expression appreciated at the depths from the beginning of your creation. And so to really know that God, love God, whatever you express that as, you know, God, goddess, allness, oneness, great spirit, don't get hung up on the words. It's that energy, that allness of the divine that loves you exactly as you are. And that love that created you knows what a precious creation you are. You know what it's like when you create something that is like really like, you're like, yeah, that's good. Just feels right, you know, you, whatever it is that you create, there are occasions when you create something and it just feels really good. It feels like a true expression of your own soul, and it feels like it's maybe received by others in a way that inspires or encourages, or something valuable happens in that process. It's that kind of perspective, right? That love itself creates you and then says, whoa, like in Genesis, this is good. This creation was really good. We belong to the divine. So we do belong. We belong to the human family. So this whole idea of like this sense of belonging has to be about cramming ourselves in a little box to fit into somebody else's idea is not very helpful. It's tough to breathe in those kinds of spaces. Have you been in those spaces where you're squished into trying to conform into something that just isn't you? And so today we encourage ourselves to open up the door, to know that that true feeling, which is a true feeling of being different, does not necessarily connect in reality to the insidious lie that you don't belong. Those two realities that we so often connect are actually a truth and a lie. And the insidious lie that we don't belong can lead to all kinds of things: loneliness, isolation, depression, illness. And there's, according to my therapist's wife, there's an epidemic of these things in the world, particularly loneliness. And how sad when there's 8 billion plus of us in all other kinds of forms of creation to relate to and to connect with. It's a sad commentary on how we have somehow bridged this idea that I'm different and made it a problem by saying I don't belong. So in actuality, true belonging is about owning our authenticity. Brené Brown's a social researcher, and she says true belonging is the spiritual practice of believing in and belonging to yourself so deeply that you can share your most authentic self with the world. True belonging doesn't require you to change who you are. It requires you to be who you are. And this makes so much sense, doesn't it? Because how could I know you or you me if I hide major aspects of who I am? If I repress my own creative expression or divinely ordained gifts, and I just sit on them, or I don't allow them to be put out into the world, or myself, therefore, shared in the world, because somebody told me it wasn't okay, or I believed it wasn't okay, ultimately, is the end of that story, right? And then, therefore, we start to try to cram ourselves into little spaces, mold ourselves into shapes and sizes we don't fit in. So Joseph demonstrated how we prosper when we continue to be who we are. He was unapologetically authentic, even when he was faced with adversity. He was abused and nearly killed and sold into slavery by his own brothers, as we mentioned earlier. Then he's shipped off and he's enslaved in a strange land. Soon he's wrongly accused of a crime and he's imprisoned. And through all of it, Joseph never falters in his faith and his self-confidence. When he was enslaved in Egypt, initially, Joseph was given greater freedoms because those that were in power recognized his honesty. When he was imprisoned, his jailers made him the head guard over the other prisoners because they saw his integrity. When he was imprisoned, he also kept his gift up, and he interpreted the dreams of others who were in prison with him. And it just so happened that some of those folks worked for the Pharaoh, including the butler for the Pharaoh, who a couple years later, when the Pharaoh had some dreams that nobody in the land could seem to interpret, the butler suddenly remembered the guy that was in the dungeon who could do that. And so Joseph was brought to the Pharaoh, and because he was able to interpret the Pharaoh's dreams, he was eventually elevated to a position of so much power that he was second only to the Pharaoh. But all of that happened because he was himself. What if you, like Joseph, were unapologetically authentic? Would that shift anything for you? I see a lot of heads nodding. What if you were joyfully proud to be you in your own unique self, in your own creative ways of expressing? What if you let out of the closet those ways of being and thinking and expressing that you have kept hidden so long? Maybe you've even hidden them from yourself. It's time to bring them out. It's time to celebrate all of who you are. If you owned your divinely ordained gifts and used them wherever you could to whoever might need them, what might that look like for you? How fulfilling could that be? So this is what we can do. Some of the things we can do, we can inquire into for ourselves and make changes and open up doors for ourselves in the sense of accepting our own authentic expression. What about on the other side of that? What about how we view others, how we might embrace others' authentic expressions and gifts? What about how we view others who seem different from the majority of the human family? Do we judge them as not belonging, not allowed to fully play in the human family, just to be kind of pushed off to the side, perhaps, at best, or eliminated at worst? It does seem to be what we do. So let's support the pride and joy of what this month is all about by easing the pain that collectively we inflict on people who are just wanting to be themselves. In the queer community, transgender and non-binary people are the most targeted, judged, and you know, currently the most vulnerable people of all those letters I said earlier, plus. And they're the ones who have this sort of put upon them idea that, oh no, you don't get to express anything more fluid than the two poles of gender. In fact, we're going to publicly declare that there's only two. So good luck. And if you love somebody of the same gender, good luck with that too. Because, don't you know, it's divinely ordained that there's only men and women, and they're the only ones that can relate to one another in a loving way. That is a box that does not come from God. It comes from scared humans who say, I need a box to tell me that there's only two categories so I can have control over this situation and I can feel justified in my own identity. Because dare I open a little window of my mind and see the possibility that somebody out there might feel differently than I do? Why would we want to participate in something that we know leads to violence, abuse, elimination, repression, injustice? Not here. Not here. Our namesake is unity, after all. Our purpose statement is that we are a loving and inclusive community. And so how do we grow ourselves into that? How do we move ourselves beyond our prejudices of whatever kind of prejudices we hold to break out of the boxes and help each other be freed from those boxes to say, God loves you exactly as you are, and I want to support the authentic expression of your own soul because I celebrate the diversity of how we are all created and can work together in ways that are very unique and powerful when we have various lived experiences, various backgrounds, various skills, various ordained gifts. So it's all of that that is available. The ignorance, the silence, and the judgments contribute to flaming, to fanning the flames of hatred and violence, ultimately. Walk a mile in someone else's moccasins. That's the it's said to be inspired by Cherokee wisdom. In 1895, there was a poem written by Mary T. Lathrop, and she tells us how to do it in this excerpt. She says, "Just walk a mile in his moccasins. Before you abuse, criticize, and accuse. If just for 1 hour you could find a way to see through his eyes instead of your own, muse, I believe you'd be surprised to see that you've been blind and narrow-minded and even unkind." 1895, she wrote that. And I don't know how long before that, this idea of walking in someone else's moccasins arose through indigenous wisdom and often, like I said, attributed to the Cherokee. But that idea is, you know, while we can't completely embody somebody else or completely know what it's like for them, at least we could reflect for a moment what it might be like. At least we could go back to the beginning of where we spoke of in this message and say, have you ever felt different? Have you ever felt repressed? Have you ever felt smushed into something that doesn't feel true for you? You know how that feels to walk around in the world like that? Not very good. So could we be the people who open at least a tiny door in our minds to begin to let the light in and out, to begin to open up the way, and then maybe even a bigger window or door of our hearts, and then maybe even in our actions, become the kind of place that we claim ourselves to be, loving and inclusive, or the kind of person. Because really, isn't that the key, that when we begin to own our own authenticity and allow ourselves a little spaciousness to roam, we begin to realize, I need some support. And we find ourselves then in community, where the community actually supports the idea and celebrates you exactly as you are. Anybody like those kind of communities? Oh, good. You found one here, actually. And I want you to know that if you're part of the queer community, you are welcome here. And by that, I don't mean like kind of, sort of welcome, conditionally welcome, like things like, you know, these painful disclaimers that we've added, like don't ask, don't tell, or love the sinner, not the sin. Or we tolerate you. Seriously? I do not want to be tolerated. Do you want to be tolerated? So we can do better than that here. We celebrate you. We welcome you. We celebrate you. We're glad you're here. You help us expand our consciousness. You help us open the door of our consciousness. You help us expand into our authenticity, into our inclusivity, into the truth of who we are. Without you, we don't see how repressive it is to repress ourselves and to make ourselves so small and to allow ourselves just to what we think is belonging to fit in. That is not belonging. belonging. He's saying, we celebrate you exactly as you are. In fact, your gifts are needed here. Yeah, yeah. I mean, think of all the ways we grow, our understanding. I've just been planning, we're going to have an interfaith pride event here. We're going to host that interfaith council of Contra Costa County's pride event. And I've been working with some others on it. And I'm part of this community, but also the queer community. And it opened my eyes to be working with other people and the way that they saw pride and the way, and I thought, oh, this is expanding my understanding too. And so it's being in those spaces with each other and having these dialogues and these conversations and truly welcoming people that our own understanding, our own compassion, our own sense of celebration for the diversity of life and for all people helps us create the kind of world we say that we want. Every Sunday, a spiritually awakened world where all life thrives in conscious oneness. You cannot say all life except. Then you're not living the vision. You're not participating in the vision we hold here. So wherever the exceptions are is where we need to do the work. In ourselves, in our minds, in our hearts, and on behalf of the rest of the human family. This is how we stop violence. This is how we stop the divisive, otherizing, demonizing trains that enslave us, ultimately, in various ways. Confine us is what I mean by that. So where do we go from here? Charles Fillmore, you know, he came up with the term unity for our movement out of a dream because he had the same divinely ordered gift that Joseph had. That's how he got guidance, was through his dreams. And he interpreted them, and he lived them, and that's why we even have unity, and why we call it unity. And it's like a beacon to hold out there to say, I'm a part of something called unity, and I'm constantly working to become an embodiment of the idea of what is unity. It's not just like these surfacey platitudes that sound good, like we're a loving and inclusive community. Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. I'd like to be a part of that. No, our work is to do it, to be it, to grow in it, to expand yourself in it, right? Yes, we are here to become it. And every day is an opportunity to learn something new and to open ourselves up further for the expression of who we are and who all the beautiful parts of creation are all around us. So there's more to Joseph's story, by the way, because some of you know it and are going, why didn't you finish the story? We're going to do that next week. But there's also more to your story, right? And there's more to my story. We are ever unfolding. So next week, we continue the many colors of the one, part two. But for now, let's remember what this month is really about. This Pride Month is about pride and joy. It's about celebrating our authenticity, and it's about celebrating the diversity all around us. It's about celebrating inclusivity and embodying that in being a unified presence, being all about unity. So let's shout it from the hilltops. I'm proud to be who I am, and I'm unapologetically inclusive. I invite you to say it with me. I am proud to be me and unapologetically inclusive of all, and so it is.